Welcome to this edition of the U Talk Podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports.
And I'm Joseph Silverspike, coming to you from the other side of a room on a different microphone, which is very exciting for us and hopefully will improve the dulcet sounds of our voices in your ear.
Well, maybe the volume, maybe not improve the dulcet noises, as you so eloquently
dulcet
put it.
Dulcet noises is not as appetizing as dulcet sound.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. Whatever.
All right.
Either way,
we've got welcome. Stuff to talk about.
Welcome to the U Talk Podcast. Hey, as always, we're going to ask you for reviews, ratings, go to iTunes, all that jazz. Email us, utalk@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. But let's get into it, right? So, quick hitters. Guess what? We're probably about a month away from fall ball. As
That's
in fall
exciting.
Football.
That is so exciting.
The next thing on the youth.
There's nothing left, right?
The youth sports schedule right now is nothing until August 30th, 6 p.m. Mountain, when we take on the Weber State football team. Is it the Wildcats?
Yes, okay, they are. That's right. They are the Wildcats. They did not have to change like the Dixie.
Yes.
Did. Well. When is Pac-12 Media Days? July
12th? It's coming quick.
I think it's July 12th. I can find it. But yeah, we're about a month away from... July 26th and 27th. And then after that, we're going to probably drop right into fall camp. And we'll get a good look at Jack Tuttle. Oh, we've got something cool to talk about. Speaking of Jack Tuttle, some big changes in the rules to football.
Oh.
The NCAA has allowed a 4-game exception for redshirt football players, which means they are allowed to participate in up to 4 games without burning their redshirt, which is very exciting for Utah.
Is that retroactive?
It's this year.
Well, because I think of Devontae Henry Cole, he had a season that we pulled the red shirt and he played.
That's interesting.
A little bit, but then they
convinced
Joe
to come back. I mean, my guess would be
no,
but you could certainly try. You'd have to talk to one of their compliance attorneys. I think maybe people don't realize.
Aren't
this,
you an attorney? You
yes,
should know
but
these
I'm not
things.
A compliance attorney. I mean,
well,
I'm a,
I don't care.
I'm a HIPAA, GRAMMA, and HB 239 2017 compliance attorney for the Department of Human Services. Not the same job as an NCAA rules compliance attorney for the University of Utah Athletics Department. It's very different. But they have a team, and if they think there's a way in, they'll try and use it, some kind of humanitarian.
I think it'd
exception.
Be good for him, whether he ends on the program or not, but either way. But either way, exciting, right? We're about a month away from some form of football. And then
I mean, we'll be talking about it. We'll be watching highlights. We'll be talking about what's happening. And then we're going to get to see Tuttle play. I mean, he could play the second half for Weber State. We could see a lot of him, which is exciting and really good from the perspective of sort of not ticking off the 4-star hotshot phenom and making him look at other schools that might play him sooner. He'll get a chance to do that. Kind of like Britton Covey. If he'd gone on his mission, he might have gone to a different school. But having those experiences with a team and being a player on the team, I think makes it much harder to leave your brethren.
You just get more connected.
Behind. Yeah.
The relationships are there. It's hard
that
to redo all those.
Family thing is a lot of stronger bond if you're
yep.
if you've been out there bleeding and sweating and getting crushed under 300-pound defensive tackles together.
Yeah.
Forms a bond, man, being nearly killed
hit.
By a Washington Husky.
Well, either way, here's what we got for you today. We got some Pac-12 talk along with some recruiting news. And then we want to talk about some local media. And then in the next couple of weeks, we're probably going to get into previewing the upcoming
the team.
Utah team.
Yeah,
like, it's time
start
to start doing that.
DBs and DTs.
Yeah.
And
it's coming soon.
All
coming
that
quick.
Stuff. I'm excited. I'm so pumped.
I'm excited
so
for
tired
you.
Of
and for me.
not being football season?
Well, for me, as a basketball fan, I can last until about mid-June, and then the NBA Finals end, and now it's the dead of summer. Like, give me something, because baseball ain't going to work. If you're a soccer fan, World Cup starts today. You probably didn't know that, Joseph.
I'm on Twitter. I know all this crap.
Okay, right. Well, either way, so we're going to talk Pac-12, some recruiting, media coverage, football previews coming in the weeks to follow. But let's get started with the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Where's your sounder?
I want to explain the sounder principle here. We've decided to roll out a new, exciting, technological feature for you, and they are the sounders, right? We figure all the big guys have them. Now, we're a kind of budget system here, so I am, as your sound engineer, also your sounder engineer. But the first one we're going to unveil is the Pac-12 in Crisis sounder, which goes like this. I can't do it. Okay.
I can barely listen to it. Well, so.
Okay. No. One more try.
Oh, you want to try again? Up,
then we're done.
Oh, boy.
Pac-12 in Crisis. I got it. I nailed it.
All right. Going
to cut that and drop it whenever it needs.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be great.
So.
You're welcome, world.
If you're wondering, the USA Today came out with an article. Let's see what day this thing officially published. Can't remember.
Pac-12 conference June 12th. Quickly falls behind rivals. It's bad.
Well, let's just give them a little synopsis here. So the first thing is pretty much that by comparison, the Pac-12 isn't making any money. They're making about $30 million, where the Big Ten schools are expected to get over $50 million, ACC $40 million. And it's just ultimately the Pac-12 is falling behind when it comes to getting money to the schools. And money makes the world go round, as we both know.
It really does. And, I mean, we're just up against it. And you didn't even say the SEC numbers. I don't see them here. But fair to say they're at least twice. I mean, huge, huge, insurmountable difference in terms of what you can pay coaches, what you can pay assistants, the kind of facilities you can develop, the kind of stadiums you can build, everything. And then to say nothing of the sort of growing, slowly growing, but growing momentum towards compensating players. There's going to be a lot of regulation around that if it happens, but I still suspect that teams with bigger budgets are going to find ways to get more cash in players' pockets. Well, and that's going to be tough to overcome.
Yeah, and here's the thing that's kind of crazy to me is, so they talked to Washington State President Kirk Schultz in this, and he said that he's still okay with Larry Scott's job. Like, he's doing a good job. We just need to find different ways to get revenue. And I'm just like, isn't that his job?
Yes. And I think there's an element of truth to it, right? We talked about this. The market is different in the West Coast than it is in the Southeast, in the East Coast, in the Midwest. But that's also, there's also a risk there of complacency and saying, well, we can't compete with the SEC, which is true, so we're just going to settle. Rather than saying we need to do everything we can and be as creative as possible to close this gap as much as we can so that the talent gap doesn't grow. Because we can survive, I think. The Pac-12 can survive coaching talent gap. I think the more you look at numbers, the more evidence there is that exceptional coaches are extremely rare, and coaches are pretty much average or really close to average within, you know, a few percentage points. My studies suggest that there's maybe absolute max 1 in 100 coaches gives you about a 10% chance better to win a game, which is huge, but 90% of coaches, right? 90% of the coaches are 1 or 2% better or 1 or 2% worse. So, and you don't know who they are until you've hired them and given them 4 or 5 years to really let that play out. So I think that I'm not too worried about Alabama being able to pay a coach $9 million and Utah being able to pay them $3 million. Because there's a lot of market inefficiency, and you can find good coaches for $3 million.
So for me, I just care about how it impacts Utah, right? So if this is impacting Utah in the sense that where our competition is lower, and so the Pac-12's, our Utah's success in the Pac-12 is discounted, then I care. Because ultimately, I think we've got great coaches now. We've been able to find them in the past. Like, Utah's going to be successful.
Well, my concern is talent, if there starts to be a bigger talent gap.
Yeah, and I just don't see that coming. Like, right now, there's not proof of that. So
no, I wouldn't say there is a talent gap right now between the East Coast and the West Coast.
It's a matter of, is there going to be one in the next 5 years, and how big does that gap get as these teams are getting, you know, $40 million now. If they're getting $10 million a year more than what a Pac-12 school's getting, you know, it's the cumulative effect that I'm concerned about. But as long as it doesn't impede Utah from competing and, you know, having a shot at like a New Year's Six or the playoff or the NCAA tournament in basketball, like, that's what really matters in my mind. And this shouldn't stop that from happening.
I agree with that. And I don't mean to fansplain, as it were, but I started having a lot more fun as a fan when Utah joined the Pac-12. And it wasn't just, oh, now we're playing USC and Washington and Stanford. I also was able to dissociate my fandom from the national scene and the kind of polling rat race and the, well, whose win is better and who's out of conference schedule. If the Utes win the Pac-12, that's awesome. And it doesn't really matter. I mean, it does, but it's not a huge deal if they go to a playoff game and play Ohio State, or they go to the Rose Bowl and they play Michigan. I mean, it's an awesome accomplishment. And
Big
the,
Ten.
The, it's control, you control what you can control, right? They can win the Pac-12. That's the championship they can win by beating the teams in front of them.
Well, if they and do that, they're pretty much going to get in those big games that you just listed off.
Long as the Pac-12 stays, whatever they call it, however they change the rules, but stays a P5, stays an automatic bid school of whatever kind that is, or automatic big conference, I'm happy. As long as Utah can get a big accomplishment by beating the teams on their schedule, I don't really care if a committee in Peoria says, oh, they're good enough to be in this game or they're good enough to be in that game. I've been very content just saying the Pac-12 is the league and the bowl season is kind of an exhibition and it's really about winning the conference.
Oh, I'm going to disagree with you there. I want to get into the playoff. I want to have a shot at national title.
And I don't mean to say I don't care.
Last couple of years, the Pac-12 has been getting more and more disregarded in regards to whether they should be in the playoff when
it would help
a team's getting eliminated.
When they get there.
That would help. Kicked. No, true. All true. Unfortunately, this hurts, but the Utes have coughed it up a couple years.
The look on Grant's face right now. Yep.
Kyle Whittingham wins bowls games.
Right.
Okay? The Pac-12 should just default put Utah on the big bowl game and they'll win.
If taking care of business against Colorado 1 year or Cal the next or, oh gosh, Arizona I think was the one the year before that, year after that.
We
I think the Utes
subjects.
Would have won a bowl game because guess what? Kyle is one of those one or two or three plus 10% coaches. You've got a half dozen of them in the whole country, and he's one. And the biggest place you see that difference is when he's got a month to get ready for you. And he's unstoppable unless his team is crap and he's up against a team that's just way better, which is what happened in the Vegas Bowl against Boise State. We just couldn't compete. But
if the talent's commensurate,
or even close, he's favored. So.
Well, to summarize and not deter ourselves too much, you know, the Pac-12, it's a revenue issue. Personally, Larry Scott needs to take some responsibility for it. They need to be more creative. But in the end, when it comes to Utah's perspective, it seems like we both agree, like, as long as the Utes have a good conference to compete in. They keep their Power 5 status. I mean, I'm not going to stress over it. I can watch the games. As a fan, you know, that's what matters. But they need to fix it. There are things that need to be fixed, even in the fan-watching perspective. Yes. But let's move on.
Yeah.
So
let's talk some actual Utah football. We got a commitment, which is exciting. What doesn't usually happen. A really good guy. Let's see. Is it Marist? Marist to, let's see, Talavau. And he's a big offensive guard. I had a chance to look at a little bit of his film. There's not a lot of game film, but some of his stuff at some camps. Really nice in terms of the way that he's built for guard. Really big and broad in the hips and good feet and stuff like that.
See, I don't want to hear the word nice. I want to hear vicious and daunting.
I would say, and again, we're talking like the film available is about 20 seconds, right? Against a couple of three-star DTs and tank tops and shorts. But I would say savagery and that kind of road grader mentality was what was missing. But in terms of the physical tools, you really like what he brings. And he's a three-star recruit. But something that's important to remember with recruiting is not all three stars are created equal. Rivals has a scale that goes for three stars, I think, from 5'5 or 5'4 to 5'7. And there's a big difference between those players. 5'8 is a four-star, 5'7 is a three-star. And it's like a first baseman who hits 299 and a first baseman who hits 305. It's pretty much the same player, but you think of the 300 hitter differently than you think of the other guy. But this is a really good early pickup for a team that already is going to have some line depth issues this year and really needs to shore that up next year because it's going to get to be a capital P problem if they don't.
Yeah,
so I'm excited about that. Good. And then I did something mischievous the other day.
My gosh.
And I wanted to share some results with you.
I don't need to say, hey, police, turn this off right now.
No, mischievous, not criminal.
Okay.
I did a sneaky thing. I had a discussion with a passionate fan of the BYU Cougars on Twitter.
On Twitter?
Yeah. Would you know it? Could you believe passionate fan on Twitter arguing with me? Never would have happened, you would think.
Never.
And so what they were saying in essence was most Utah fans love playing BYU and haven't changed their opinion about that game a bit since joining the Pac-12. But there's this vocal minority. I mean, you hear this argument in all sorts of contexts, the vocal minority.
Sometimes true, argument. Sometimes not.
Sometimes true, sometimes not. That is saying, well, we never want to play them and they suck and all this stuff because they like the rivalry aspect. Ute fans like to be able to say, we're better than you and we don't need you. It's sort of a systemic attack on BYU rather than just football. So I said, well, we can figure that out. We can actually pull and figure it out. But you can't just ask fans because
then they're going to wait
and bias the poll and they'll go all crazy. So what I did was I pretended to Ute fans on Rivals.com and BYU fans on Rivals.com and their separate little forums that there was a national fan survey to get a sense of how they felt about playing random regionally associated teams. And it was just sort of a random list of teams. And there's about 14. What's your favorite football team? How do you rate your passion on this scale? How would you feel if you played Pitt Panthers, Oklahoma Sooners, Louisville Cardinals, Kansas Jayhawks? I pulled 12 teams randomly, added a couple of FCS teams that I picked a little less randomly, and then in the one on the BYU page, I added Utah Utes. And in the one on the Utah page, I added BYU Cougars. So they're not, when the respondent is taking the poll, they're not framing it as a rivalry poll, right? And hopefully minimizing the kind of pole gaming that you get, although not entirely, right? You could do it with like a sophisticated study. The one that I thought of, if you gave somebody $20 cash and you said, you can bid on going to see a BYU Tech game, how much do you want to pay? Whatever you don't bid, you get to keep. But if you bid the most, you get the ticket. And there's 19 other people playing this game with you. And I think that would get you a real accurate sense of how they fare. But this was pretty good, I think, to get an accurate, dispassionate.
Did they pick one team of those 12 you picked out? Or were they picking
all of them? So, like, here's the – I got 100.
You just pick any of them you want to play.
It was a separate question for each. So 54.4% of respondents are somewhat excited to play the Pitt Panthers. 91.3% of respondents are very excited to play the Oklahoma Sooners. And I did that for a number of teams.
Okay.
I'm not going to dig into all the numbers.
Yeah, no, let's just skip to the –
I'm just going
to
skip to the rivalry numbers. And that's what the poll was. The rest of this is just – BS to trick people into thinking outside of the rivalry box so that when they spot that question, they answer it a little bit more honestly. And I was surprised because I thought there would be some fans who were pretty excited to play BYU. There aren't any, hardly. Let's see here. We've got 4% were very excited to play BYU. Two people, 1.3% voted NA, which is, they're not even playing that team. I don't even know why they voted that. Somewhat excited.
Well, you should 1.3%, have included that as an option.
Neither excited nor disappointed, 10.7%. So total, neutral to very excited, is about 16% of the Ute fans world. And these are deeply passionate, subscribing fans. So these are the highest passion fans.
Yeah, these are people willing to put money to get recruiting news.
Yeah, and that's relevant, right? I mean, this is not a true sample of every Ute fan in the Valley.
So I would almost say these are higher earners, probably.
I would say that's probably true. I didn't ask demographic questions. But
yeah, but you could, I mean, you could just find out who the subscribership is and find out that. I mean...
Now we got somewhat disappointed, 11.4%, which leaves a whopping, a mammoth, I mean, really shocking, 71.1% of respondents very disappointed. If my team announced a home game against the BYU Cougars, I would be very disappointed. And I thought we would have a fairly even distribution with a weight towards very disappointed.
So here's the thing.
This was a real surprise to me.
First of all, I'll put it out there. If you are out there and your job is surveying people and can give us better questions or a better setup, we're open to it. Second.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love to do this again. The problem is a lot of the better options cost money. And this was the free, easy way to do it.
So, however, I will say this. Here's my question, and I wonder if this would skew things a little bit for Utah fans. What have we been told up until this point, the class of game BYU's considered when they're being scheduled now?
They're
an A game.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You're telling me that I have to choose between playing BYU or another top school across the country.
I said, try not to consider this in terms of what game this might be replacing, but in isolation. And obviously, you can only do that to a certain extent.
But yeah, you got to understand.
Ute fans are very much in that mode when they
see BYU. And we have been, Utah fans, to good or bad, have been indoctrinated pretty well with a few things, right? Mm. Kyle Whittingham's going to have a good defense. Larry Kriskoviak schedules based on his expectations. Chris Hill, BYU was an A game. We've been ingrained with these kind of things. So I just find it almost impossible for a Utah fan to look at that and be like,
but
not doing a compare game.
Very disappointed? Not somewhat disappointed?
Compared to other A games? I would be very disappointed. You're telling me instead of playing Ohio State or Michigan, why are we so addicted to the Big Ten? But Virginia Tech.
That's legitimate.
Florida
right?
State. Like, those A games, I want to see. I would be extremely excited. I really hope Virginia Tech never comes here because I will be having an identity issue like nobody's business.
No, you won't.
Oh, man. Then you have,
we're gonna have to have a bet if that happens. I didn't realize. Okay, go.
You're telling me, because I'm sorry, we've been indoctrinated into this. There's no way I'm going to say I'm super excited to play BYU when I know that in reality there's another big game that didn't get scheduled because now we've scheduled BYU. Yeah.
And I think there's truth to that, but the fact that there are reasons for Utah fans to hold this overwhelming distaste for this game doesn't change the fact that the distaste for the game appears to be entirely authentic. That
what
there
did the BYU
isn't
side?
Some we'll get to the BYU side because it's different. It's very different.
Another thing while you're pulling that up is, you know, risk reward, right? There's no, the reward is minimal for beating BYU.
Especially
risk,
after a 3-week season.
If there's a fluke that BYU wins, yes, I said fluke, BYU fans. If there's a fluke that BYU wins that game, all the reward, like all the risk, like that's just the risk reward spectrum as an analyst just does not work. That's for me, that's why I'd say disappointed. The only thing that game has going for it is the rivalry side of it. That we get to say 7 in a row right now, and we
eight
get to say hashtag
you can just
eight.
Say it. It's eight.
Eight is coming.
Have you looked at these rosters? It's eight.
I know. You like to count the chickens before they hatch.
This not every chicken.
This
chicken.
Is Joseph
counting.
National title shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, right. If I'm sticking to my 10+ win prediction for the Utes, one of those is going to be beating BYU. I will go out on a limb, that very sturdy limb, and say no Pac-12 Utah team that wins 10 or more games will ever lose to an independent BYU
team. I was wondering
BYU
how many more caveats you were going
to
add to
the
that.
The idea being that if a Utah team is good enough to win 8 or 9 of their Pac-12 games, they'll never lose to BYU.
Okay.
So here's the BYU fans' results. Very disappointed, 15.4%. There are some BYU fans who don't want to play Utah, which I thought was interesting.
I think that's interesting
no
as well.
One, is it really zero? It's zero. No one was somewhat disappointed. You were there, so there's like 15%.
The very disappointed.
This is the kind of distribution you would expect from the loud minority theory, right? We have no one who's like, I kind of don't like that game, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this, there's no one. And then we have this little group that's like, yeah, I hate playing Utes. They suck. And they spell Utes with a Y-E-W. You know how they are. That kind of 10%ers turns out is a 15.4%ers. And then you've got 15.4 who are neutral. And then 38.5 who are somewhat excited and 30.8 who are very excited. So this is exactly what you would expect. It's a normal distribution with a little patch of trolls at the bottom saying mostly we're somewhat excited. A lot of us are very excited and some of us are neutral. It's sort of a smooth curve that drops off before you get to disappointment. And then your forest of trolls. Whereas with the Utah one, if it's a normal distribution, it's a normal distribution that's basically off the charts and negative. There's a ton of very disappointed people, and then a lower number of but again, it's not consistent with the troll farm, right? It's exactly what you would expect to see if Utah fans as a whole were not interested in this game, as a general rule. And so
we're mischievous.
In order to kind of evaluate it, there may be a troll element. We can even say it's about the same, right? About 15% of these very disappointed or, you know, stamping their foot kind of people. That still leaves over 50% who hate this game legitimately. And that's, I mean, it supports my hypothesis, but more dramatically than I expected. Utah fans just don't want to play.
Well, I'm curious. This might help us transition to another subject. How many people took each of those polls?
So this surprised me too. 150 Ute fans, 26 BYU fans.
Whoa.
And that is different than every other thing I have ever put it. Because I'll tell you guys, I'm on Twitter. I write a lot. And I know how many people click on things and read things. And we know how many people listen to our podcasts. And we know this stuff. And we care. Even though we're not, you know, selling a bunch of ads, Grant and I making a bunch of money, we still pay attention to the same things that the guys at 1280 and 700 do in terms of fan engagement. And I will tell you, Ute fans are not close to the level of engagement I get on rivalry stuff. Well, if you look at my rivalry tweets and articles, huge engagement all across the state, all across the country, an order of magnitude more in retweets and likes and mentions and all that stuff that you measure engagement and interest by. If I was just focused on drawing interest and not just what I like to write about, I'd only write about rivalry and BYU. You get more clicks.
Well, I mean, I've been doing this for a while now.
About
8 years with Torn by Sports. And I can tell you right now, even as, you know, BYU went through the Bronco years and then they started sliding and whatnot, like, even throughout those years, the BYU fan engagement is pretty even keel. Like, it's even keel in that it's higher than Utah engagement, no matter what.
And they were more engaged last year.
We do more.
Despite winning, I mean, they lose to UMass. It's, like, hard to even remember that because that's such a baffling fact. But they did, and they still clicked on more articles and listened to more podcasts. I mean, the fans are just more engaged.
Which is crazy because I hear people talk about or complain about the lack of Utah coverage, especially in Utah. And that's a big part of it. The other part of it personally is I just wonder if the market can handle more sports coverage. If we lost a sports radio station, although it probably wasn't that great because it's gone, obviously. I don't know if there's
right,
a market.
In terms of ears, right? Yeah. You say there's so many ears out there, and advertisers are willing to pay X dollars per ear.
Yep.
And if a whole radio station goes away and you don't add any new content at the other radio station, that tells you the advertisers didn't feel like there were any more ears to buy.
Yep.
And that tells you, and that's particularly true for the Utah coverage. And candidly, I think the rapid pace of turnover that you see at ESPN 700 relative to 1280 has something to do with budget. That is, if you have the same guy on staff doing your radio for 12 years, you've got to pay him eventually.
Yep.
And if you keep, you know, hiring whoever Utah's next punter is, you know, you can pay him less and save a lot of money that way by kind of churning through less talented guys. I mean, the guys that 1280 has are much more experienced, much better connected. Their coverage ticks me off sometimes, and I don't always like their takes, but in terms of objective measures of kind of how much they're worth as professionals, you know, they can demand a higher salary, and I think that comes from the same place of just there's more fans. And then with the rivalry in particular and the insistence on keeping it and the media focus on it, there's a whole huge body of extremely casual sports fans who never pay attention to football or basketball except when Utah and BYU play. I mean, my mother-in-law, she hates sports. She complains about sports every single time they come on. Oh, I want to watch the ballet and the stupid football came on and I couldn't watch it. That's what she says all the time, except BYU Utah week.
Which is why when
she won't watch the game, but she cares. And I think that that's reflected in a lot of places, and that's why they keep doing it. And that's why I keep writing about it. It's why I'm going to write this
trolling article that is going to infuriate thousands of BYU fans, and they're all going to be screaming at me about why it doesn't count and why it doesn't matter. And you know who loves that? The guys at Rivals, who are going to make a bunch of ad revenue and add a bunch of subscriptions because people want to read either.
I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is the fans that are complaining about Utah coverage need to engage in all of the Utah coverage and
let's
show
listen
demand.
To our podcast. Show the demand.
Well, they're already
listening.
That's
I know, but like share it with your buddies. Say this podcast
that's a good
is
idea.
Amazing and you should listen to it.
Yeah. Well, we've been going all off season, maybe not as frequently as you'd hoped, thanks to plenty
I think
of
we've
things.
Done pretty good.
But
not perfect, but pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we're here. Look, we're definitely not perfect, but we do like your reviews and ratings. If you can give us 5 stars on iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else, please do. If there's something you want us to improve, please contact us, utalk@gmail.com or through Twitter, @utalkpodcast. And then, of course, you can reach out to myself or Joseph personally on Twitter. I'm GrantTBS on Twitter. He's
Jay Silverswine.
Just try to search that. You'll find it.
Yeah. Jay Silver Z, and I'm the only one.
All right. There you go. Well, until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.